So welcome to the teleconference with the Tyson Center for Faith and Spirituality in the Workplace. This is Judy Neal, and my guest today is a very special man to me. His name is Dr. J. Robert Ouimet, and I'm just delighted that he is going to be with us on this call, and even more importantly, with us at our conference, the Wisdom at Work Conference, at the end of October. Today's date is October 19th, 2012. And I want to begin with a quote from his book, which is titled, Everything Has Been Loaned to You. And in the beginning of the book, on page 16, he writes, as far back as I can remember, I've always felt guilty about wealth. It's been an obsession, not only material wealth, but also moral and spiritual wealth. I've always been haunted by the parable of the talents. Quote, what have you done with the gifts I loaned you? Unquote. And as time passed, I've seen this mass of privileges increase, and I've always asked myself, where, oh God, is all this leading me? How am I going to be able to answer? How am I going to be able to give an answer to the parable of the talents? So please join me in about 30 seconds of silence. Thank you very much. So let's do a quick check-in and see who's on the call so far. So say your name and where you're calling from.
Peggy O'Neill, Fort Smith, Arkansas.
Hi, Peggy.
Hi, Judy.
Ed Williams from Fayetteville, Arkansas.
Hi, Ed.
Hi.
Diane Williams from Fayetteville, Arkansas.
Hi, Diane.
Good morning.
Terry Clark from Wellington, Florida.
Who was that, Terry?
Yeah, Terry Clark from Wellington, Florida.
Hi, Terry. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you.
Alan Tyson. Alan Tyson from Rogers, Arkansas.
Hi, Alan.
Good morning, Judith.
This is Jim Stoner calling from the Financial Management Association conference in Atlanta.
Yeah, thank you for taking the time out, Jim. I'm so glad you can be with us.
My pleasure.
This is Sam Simon. I'm calling this morning from McLean, Virginia. I'm with Intersections International in New York.
Yeah.
Hey, hi, Sam. Yeah, you're an edgewalker, aren't you?
Maria Maraca, Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Hi, Maria. I'm going to get
hi,
to talk to you
Mary.
Twice today. Maria's on our conference planning committee. Hi.
Hi.
I see that Eric has joined the call.
Eric Hellman in Toronto.
On free conference call, ht.com. Please enter your
So we have two Canadians on the call. Thank you for calling in, Eric. At least two that I know. Actually, three, right, Maria?
Yes, I am Canadian.
Great.
Yay! Canada! Miss Canada.
Yeah.
Jan Freed from Iowa.
Hi, Jan.
Hi, Judy.
Good to have you on the call. And I see that Stephen Caldwell has joined the call. Stephen? Robert, you'll meet Stephen at the conference. He's going to be presenting on workplace chaplaincy and what they're doing with Tyson Foods in terms of faith-friendly workplace.
Oh, so, beautiful.
Is there anyone else who hasn't checked in? Okay. All right. Well, then let's go ahead and begin. So welcome, everybody. It's my great pleasure to introduce Robert Ouimet to you. Robert is the chairman of the board and chief executive officer of Holding OCB Inc., Cordon Bleu International Limited, and Piazza Tommaso International Inc. This group of companies was founded by his father, J. René Ouimet, in 1933, and it is the most important Canadian producer and marketer of Italian pasta, frozen food products. Dr. Ouimet is also president of the To God Go Foundation, which I hope we'll get a chance to talk about a little bit on the call today. He holds a Bachelor of Commerce from the HEC, University of Montreal, a Bachelor in Political and Social Sciences, magna cum laude, University of Freiburg in Switzerland, and a Master of Business Administration from Columbia University in New York, and then finally a Doctorate in Economic and Social Sciences, magna cum laude, at the University of Freiburg, where he did his dissertation on the work that he's done in his company and the integration of spirituality in the workplace. Dr. Ouimet has visited more than 100 university campuses. It's probably close to 200 now, I think, Robert, with all the travel you're doing. And he's also visited businesses in North America, Europe, the Middle East, and Asia, and just given hundreds of talks to business leaders, management professors, and students. His extensive travels have also allowed him to meet thinkers and community leaders who are concerned with the importance of spirituality within organizations. In 2008, Dr. Ouimet privately published his English language biography titled Everything Has Been Loaned to You, which is what I quoted from at the beginning of this call. Robert and Andre Delbecq, who was on this call last week as my guest, and I created the Management, Spirituality, and Religion Promising Dissertation Award that supports doctoral students who are doing research in this field. And Robert has been incredibly supportive of people doing research on spirituality in the workplace. His keynote at our conference is titled How Spirituality in Management Works to Reconcile the Growth of Human Well-Being with Productivity and Profit. Welcome, Robert.
Thank you, Judy.
So I want to start by just having you tell people a little bit about the company you lead. As I said in your biography, your father started the company in 1933, and it's a frozen foods products and other kinds of food products. So what else could you tell us about the company before we talk about the spirituality part, but just basically the company as a business?
Well, it's been founded 80 years ago next March. We are in the sterile can business mainly, but also in frozen food. The third generation tried the business in the last 10 and a half years. It has been pure hell. And both of our sons are now out of the business and doing something else. I'm sharing that in confidence with everyone, each one of you. I'm doing it certainly in humility. Could be easy not to talk about it. And humility is precious for me because my pride grows all the time. And humility is God. This being said, we have now in place top people to succeed to the two sons who missed the ship. 2-on-2. It's a good average. The new team, you will see part of it with Judy 2 weeks from now. You will have the new CEO. He's very old. He's about 50. And he's been working with us for 7 years. And he left when my second son walked in. He walked out, and he came back 6 months ago. Also, you will meet the director general of their foundation, capital T. It's not mine. It's not called We Met, which is rare. It's Gaston Sauvé. He will be there with us. He's a holy man. Absolutely brilliant, and you will enjoy any moment you have free to spend with him. And finally, you will meet a lady, Patricia, who is in our company. We don't have any human resource department because we don't consider ourselves as a resource, and even worse, human capital, as I hear more and more in business schools around the world, which is really, Karl Marx even, I think, should be turning in his coffin when he hears that. I am turning. So the department is called Department of Human Development. She's the director of that department, reporting to the CEO, Rob McKinsey. And you will see these people. They will talk about our project. And you will see their faces, their eyes, and you will see what is going on. I won't comment on that. It's up to you to figure out. There is good chance that this organization, founded by my father, will continue to reach the century. The foundation is there. It's called To God Go, Not We Met, which is very rare. That foundation will have a role in continuing the business founded by my father. What else? We are mainly in sterile business. We are gradually pulling out of frozen food business, which is for included the giants of that area. Quite a few of them are in difficulties, and so we are graciously pulling out of that and concentrating on sterile business, in which was the beginning of us. What else?
Well, why don't we go ahead?
We have a serious board of directors composed of a majority of people from outside, no one from the family between now and 25 years from now. On the board, no one except me. So that's where we are. So we will reach 80 years next March. We'll have some celebration about that.
That's quite
so a business that lasts 80 years indicates that productivity, imagination, creativeness, new products, renovation, doing all sorts of mistakes during that time, which is human. Well, we certainly have done quite a few good things because when you are able to stand up and be solid in the free market system for 960 months, it's not bad.
It's not bad at all. It's an incredible achievement. So let's move on to talking about how you got involved in the integration of spirituality in the workplace, and also give us some of that history, and then give us some examples of some of the management activities, two or three management activities that have come out of this emphasis on spirituality in the workplace.
I'm just completing a tour of 9 or 10 public conferences in Europe, in Italy, France, and Poland, which do answer everything that Judy did ask a minute ago. I don't know where to start. Where do you want me to start, Judy?
I think starting with Mother Teresa.
I thought I would answer questions, but what do you want me to cover?
Yeah, why don't you talk about your trip to visit Mother Teresa?
Uh-huh. You're sure of that?
I'm sure of that.
Okay. Since my birth, including baptism, that loaned to me a colossal faith that has never gone down, never. It's not my will, but I'm telling the truth. It's never gone down. It's still creeping up. I never had any hesitation in my faith at all, including what the Catholic Church is living in the last 5 years. It has not shaken anything, which is pure faith. So it's a gift. Starting with that and all the studies I did and all the trips I've done and being the only son of the founder of our companies and so on, and being rather intelligent, which is not my fault. I didn't plan that. Having two daughters, two sisters, I didn't plan that. Having a holy wife that endures me for 48 years, I just spoke to her a minute ago. It's also part of the endless list of privileges in which I am still immersed, including meeting Judy through the help of André Delbecq about 6 years ago. Judy brings, every time I see her, hear her, she brings me very, very strong, powerful inner peace and joy. So all that being added together, I was feeling more and more guilty because how can I pay back if only the interest on all these things that are so. So it took me 6 years to obtain a rendezvous with Mother Teresa in Calcutta. But when I have something in my head, I don't have it elsewhere. So I saw her. And she knew I had one question to ask her and not two, just one. So my question was clear cut, clean cut. I don't think many people would have asked Mother Teresa in Calcutta the same question, but I don't give a damn. That question was in my heart, and I was dangerously looking for the answer. So I asked her, should I give everything I have, Mother? Question mark, paragraph, silence. Her answer took 4 minutes, and she changed completely the plan of my life. Upside down, you don't know how much, but it saved me. Her answer was this: you have nothing to give, Mr. Ouimet. Nothing is yours. It's all been loaned to you. If you want, you can try to manage all these loans to you, for God, but much better with God, with, W-I-T-H. I just understood the difference beginning about 10 years ago. It's colossal, the difference, together with God. And if you want to do that, you are married, I'm not married, which I thought was quite evident. And being married in the hierarchy of love of God, your first priority in your management of everything is your wife. In case you don't know, your wife is not your wife. She's loaned to you. You'll have to report on your management. And after your wife and not before, your 4 children, and in case you don't know, they're not yours, they're loaned to you. You'll have to report on 1, 2, 3, 4. And right after your children and not before, I was completely doing the opposite all the way. After your children and not before, each human being working in your companies, Mr. Ouimet. And in case you don't know, Mr. Ouimet, your companies are not your companies. They're his companies. So you will have to report on each human being that has worked in his companies. Well, that made our project. And then she had given me the answer I was looking for. And right after that, not asked for, I never thought it would be possible, she just said, would you join me? I'm going to go around Calcutta to visit our main houses. Would you like to come with me? Obviously, I didn't say no. And I went. You know, I did that with her for 2 days. 2 days. With her around the shop out there in the pure hell, pollution, poverty, smell, but how colossally precious for my fragility. I've answered your question, Judy.
Yes.
Probably too long, I'm sorry.
No, what a beautiful answer. And as I listen to you, I'm just profoundly affected by how I personally have my priorities out of order. It's like I'm hearing Mother Teresa's voice through you and really having a lot to think about. And so I really appreciate you sharing that beautiful story and how transformative it can be for people who listen to that message. So when you got back to the workplace, you started to make some changes and begin introducing things a little differently. One of the things you did was you wanted to create a silence room. Could you talk about your approach to that and how people responded?
I've seen Mother Teresa four times in Calcutta, twice in New York, twice in Montreal, once in Washington, D.C., and she wrote me 23 letters, 12 of which are handwritten, and the last one was written 4 months before God recalled her. She is the one that suggested on my second trip to Calcutta in 85, Mr. Wimay, you should put on each work site a silence and prayer room. I told her it didn't make any sense. 3 weeks later, the room was there. It was badly positioned. It was not democratic. So it took about 10 years before the people were not anymore afraid of that room and the possibility of becoming an active 25 hours a day Catholic room. That didn't take place, and now we're 30 years later. The room is used often, as our people will talk about it weeks from now. It is in freedom. Muslims are going in. At certain times, they started singing prayers. We told them, you don't sing here. You keep silent. And they're coming regularly, and quite a few other people. So from that room emanates the light, and probably the word light is a capital L. Mm. That was one of the major moves in that unusual, very, very difficult, but so beautiful adventure. Because it has always been our profound intention that all that be lived in freedom, not in free for all, in freedom.
When you come and speak at the conference, you'll be sharing more about some other practices, you and your incredible team. And so rather than have you talk more about those right now, I'm curious, and I'm sure people would like to know more about the To God Go Foundation, because you've done something very unusual in creating this foundation. And so could you talk about what it is and why you created it?
That foundation, their foundation, has three objectives. The first one is to get our project known on Earth, which is done, which is being done. Number two is to co-finance pilgrimage to the Holy Land for priests and pastors. It's 12 priests or 12 pastors or a mix of both, and it is for 12 days, so it's 12 all the way. And it's co-finance. It's about $20,000 per pilgrimage that the foundation gives to the group that wants to go there. And they come and visit us after 3 months after to debrief on that. It's phenomenal what they tell us they receive in their heart, not in their brain. God bless. It's phenomenal, and myself, having been there 16 times, and I'll be there next year, probably the last time, what they're saying they receive in their heart is extraordinary. So, and the third objective is to co-finance electronic media to announce the message of Christ. This in that area, we have to, almost nothing because we're not, the foundation is not big enough for that yet.
Thank you. So in the work that you've done, both in the corporation and in the foundation, what have you found most challenging or most difficult?
It would have been, can I be vulgar?
Of course.
Ladies, I have the approval from Judy.
It's just how you are. Just be yourself, please.
The toughest part of all that is that it would have been so easy to shut up, not to talk about spirituality and silence and prayer, not say a bloody word about it, and do like most others do in my job, having the wealth material accumulated, and shut up, and you know, the religion and spirituality, that's for private, which is the greatest invention of the devil. He's brilliant, that son of a bitch. So this has been the hardest part, Judy. I have been, and I'm still am, so afraid to offend anyone, a person, not a group, a person, one by one. It's so hard because when you begin to enter that area, how far do you go? And that reaches into St. Paul, you know. Lord, help me. I've spoken. I discovered I should have shut up. Lord, help me. I didn't speak, and I discovered I should have spoken. Lord, help me. I've told the Lord that thing quite a few times, but and recently I sent him an email about that. It's very difficult in this present environment, and not only in Canada, and the US, it's the same thing. In Europe, I hear it, I see it. In Asia, also in the Middle East, the tension between Muslim and the two other monotheist religion is very, very high tense, and you know, it would have been so easy not to touch these areas. But the call is there, and we're answering it with humility, doing a lot of mistakes, but spreading, apparently, we're told, a light around here and there. I've given up to now 262 public conferences on Earth, and I didn't leave any of these groups, at none one of them, where I didn't see in the eyes of the people at the end of the conference and long question periods, in the eyes, what they tell me after the conference is not important at all. It's what you see in the eyes. And I've always seen 20 or 30% of in the eyes, something beautiful entered in that person, and it might be the mustard seed that will grow 30 years from now, and I don't give a damn. I had a beautiful woman at the Vatican, please, after an international conference I gave, ask me the question, what's going to happen to your project when you're dead, Mr. We Met? I like these questions. So I answered. If it is my project, madame, it better die, and it would be better like that. If it is God's project, it will continue, but not necessarily in our companies. And madame, allow me, I do not care. And that's probably why in the last 10 years it almost died. And that's probably why it's really restarting now, a very, very powerful trust, the THRUST.
Well, I think that's a beautiful note to open it up for other people on the call to make comments and ask questions. And you have some people on the call who are wonderful friends who know you, and some people who've never heard you speak before or don't know too much about your story. So I hope that our conversation has, particularly for people who don't know you and this call that you've answered, I hope this makes you a little curious, more curious about this wonderful man that I feel so proud to call friend. And so it is open.
I'm not
for
your friend. Judy, I'm not your friend.
You're not my friend.
No, what, I'm your brother.
You're my brother. I had a feeling you would say that.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. So who would like to ask a question or make a comment? Just go ahead and say your name and jump in.
This is Alan Tyson in Rogers, Arkansas, and I've been the recipient of the To God Go Foundation. The very first time I met Robert, just in a very short time, he stopped, as he will often do, and have that moment of silence, and he kind of freaked me out. He said, you know, I think the Lord has just given me a message, and I want to have you and 12 of your chaplains go to Israel and help you do that. And, you know, when I came home and told my wife this, she said, you don't even know this man. You know, what if you recruit people to go and this doesn't come through? So we were the first group of Protestant pastors that the foundation had paid for, and it was just a marvelous experience for me to be able to invite pastors and chaplains to go with me to Israel and to impact their ministry and their connectedness with the walk of Christ. And I'm just eternally grateful for that, and just wanted to be a testimony and witness to the influence of that foundation. Thank you, Robert.
And Alan, can you say a little bit about just like one thing that you took from that trip that was different in your life after you came back?
Well, just the experience of walking where Jesus had walked, and to have that refresh. This was my third trip to Israel, and you know, it never becomes just a vacation and a tourist visit. It's not that at all. It's just the spiritual connectedness to the land where Jesus lived and walked and had his ministry, and just the transformational walk that Jesus had and can change our lives was just was renewed and refreshed in my own mind as we made that journey and had that walk again.
Thank you so much. Robert, I think you wanted to say something?
No, I was thanked for that, but I wanted to say that it's not me, it's him.
Yes.
This is Sam. I was about to just make a brief comment.
Go ahead, Sam.
It's Sam Simon. I'm just responding to your comment about the occasional discomfort of speaking out loud about matters of faith and spirituality. I just recommend, there's a book that's out there that I find interesting in a presents this question in a slightly different format, but I found it to be a bit of an invitation to our work. And Michael Sandel, who is a Harvard ethicist, has written a book called What Money Cannot Buy. And he ends that, and at the end of the book is a statement that that there are goods and services, there are goods in this world which he calls sacred goods or sacred activity that we don't have language to speak about in the public. And, you know, he says that we need that language. And, I think it is important to be respectful as we do have these kind of conversations. And I agree that there is this aversion to public engagement and discussion about matters of sacredness or faith, whatever you want to call it. And I just invite people to look at that book and to, you know, think about this challenge and this invitation that he presents you, and you do too, of, you know, speaking, getting comfortable speaking publicly or in business or other environments about issues of or questions of sacredness.
Thank you, Sam. It sounds like a great resource.
Hi, this is Peggy O'Neill, and I really appreciate you being here today. And earlier you spoke about you can either manage for God or with God, and I'm curious, what practices do you personally engage in to hear God, to know that you're working with God? I'd love for you to speak to how you go about your listening. And
yes.
This is Jim Stoner from Fordham University.
Well, Jim, can I answer the previous question?
Go ahead.
I wasn't sleeping. For 80% of the duration of my life, and I'm 78 years old and playing tennis every day, for almost 80% of my life was for God, and that was better than for me. The great advantage of doing it for God is that sometime what you're doing works out. And then you're legitimately happy about the results, which is legitimate and fair and human and understandable. But I didn't feel good with that. And then I discovered I remembered what she told me. If you want, you can manage all that God has loaned to you for him, but much better with him. And I discovered the with him. So now for 5 or 9 or 10 years, and I will do it with a voice, I'm doing the following. I'm sending the following email. Now I'll do it in a bridge form. I do it almost every day, sometimes a few times a day, because I need it. Very dear Father, very dear Jesus, very dear Holy Spirit, thank you very much for accepting between now and eternity that each moment of my living life on earth will be lived with the three of you. Thank you for accepting that from now on, everything I will see with my eyes, I will see with the three of you. Everything I will hear, it will be with the three of you. Everything I will smell, with the three of you. Everything I will say, with the three of you. Everything I will touch, will be with the three of you. Everything I will write, with the three of you. Think, with the three of you, live with the three of you. I want to do my bloody best at every moment. Please don't count on that too much. But I want to try to do my bloody best with the three of you. And I would like to ask you a favor to the three of you. When I will fall, which I will do often for the rest of my life, can I fall with the three of you? And can I raise up after with the three of you? And I'm asking the three of you nothing. You just had what the hell you want, tough or easy. I trust you, which is pure faith. So that's the great thing about that, and that's strictly personal, the great thing about that is that things are, there's more love in my life today than 10 years ago. And since I'm doing that more and more, and I have the impression that the three of them accept that I do everything with the three of them, including falling, I love more. Ask my wife, ask our children, people I work with. The great thing about doing it with the three of them is that there's no way I can take credit for anything because I don't know what the hell they have added or subtracted that did help to love more. I give the testimony that it works, and they're doing a good job.
Oh, thank you so much.
Robert, you might also say something about the Eucharist and what that means to you.
Oh, Judy, come on.
And Peggy was asking about spiritual practices, and you've talked with me about that being spiritual vitamins.
Yeah, it's more than vitamins. It's for my poor self, it's a neutron bomb. After the 3 days I spent in 83 with Mother in Calcutta during my first trip, right at the end of the trip before I took the flight back to America, she was there and she told me this, Mr. Wimette, even if you want to manage everything that God has loaned to you for him, she didn't say with at that time, for him, do not try without praying a lot. And then she took a little finger on a stone bench at the entrance of the main convent in Calcutta, and on the stone bench with the finger, don't try without praying a lot. You will not be able. 2 hours later in the aircraft, I was taking off, and I told Jesus, okay, I've just learned I have nothing. I've just learned you loaned everything. Thank you. I really want to manage it for you. And the little lady just told me, don't try with her. We met without praying a lot. You won't be able. I just want to tell you, Jesus, she's bloody right. Yeah, my life is completely down up. So I'm informing you, I took a decision starting tomorrow, April 17th, 1983, I will go and receive you in the Eucharist. Every day. This is 29 and a half years later, and I testify to the effect that not once did I miss it when I was able to go. And about 4 years ago at Notre Dame University, at the business school that I visit every year to give the conference on our project, at the question period, a colossal football player, and now they don't win anymore football, but he rose up at question and said, Mr. Wimette, I read your biography, and can I ask a very personal question? Yes, go ahead. What's the result? You've been going to the Eucharist every day. What's the result? I like these questions. And what came out was very powerful. I never thought about it. It just came powerful, therefore not from me, but from me. I said this, sir. As of today on your campus that I enjoy so much each time I come back, the result is this. Today, that's 4 years ago, today, Jesus for me is the most extraordinary human ever lived on earth. Number two, Jesus today for me is God. And number three, result for me today, and still today, as we talk on the phone, he is cool enough to be my best friend, most intimate friend, closest friend, always available friend and brother. Sir, this is my answer. So it is today the same answer. It has saved me, and the proof is in the pudding. I do love more today, each human being, even if still very, very fragile and imperfect. The Eucharist for me has worked out. I'm not saying that it should be the same path for everyone. It should not. Each one chooses with her or his heart the path that feels at ease. They all leave at the same place. So it's an intimate human relation with Christ. So, Judy, all our friends on the line must be tired and fed up with that story of a crackpot.
Well, if they are, they have the choice to hang up, and they haven't done that. So they're still here. And
our brother Jim Stoner had a question, but he never came back.
Yeah, we interrupted Jim. So please, Jim, what would you like to say? Jim, are you with us?
Hi, is that Judy?
Yes.
Thank you very much for letting me get back in again. I apologize for trying to come in too early. I'm on a cell phone, and I have bad hearing. And I'm looking forward to listening to the whole conversation again on the archives, which will be available in, a day or so. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, what I was going to say was a couple things to thank Jay Robert. One was, most of you would not know that I've benefited many times from his coming to my classes and my visiting him and his company and Montreal and other times we've been together, which have been great fun. The thing that that comes up for me most strongly was the second priority that Mother Teresa gave you, which was the employees of your company.
You know what?
And
I think,
I've thought about that for a long time. Excuse me?
Jim, can you hear me?
Yeah.
I believe Robert just dropped off the call accidentally.
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
All right. All right. Just want to make sure. Okay, thanks.
Well, thanks, Judy.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
So, Jay Robert, I was saying that one of the things that I really found very valuable was Mother Teresa's alerting you and calling your attention to your obligations and your responsibility for your employees, which you always knew about. But the way she phrased it, I thought was very good. And how it's been helpful to me particularly is that my belief that the most important stakeholder in any company is not the customer, and it's not the owners, but it's the employees. And as I was listening to the phone call today, I came up with some ideas about how we might actually become more effective in learning those stakeholders. And I found myself thinking through how we might look at different stakeholders. And I'll wrap it up right now, but simply say that it occurred to me that if we were sensing what those stakeholders, the employees, were concerned about, we might look at it three ways. One is the present, like, Every employee has a single, not vote, but perspective, but it could be like a vote on how the company's doing. Then we could weight each employee by the number of years that they've been with the company, and that would be those who have created the company and invested in it. And then we could weight each employee by the number of years they have to remain up to 65 if they stay with the company, and kind of the future of the company. And I thought all three of those, well, it may not make any sense, but I thought all three of those perspectives could be helpful to me and then me, then helpful to others in really honoring, as you have done so well, your obligation to the people who made your company. So it may not make any sense what I said, but for me it was really interesting, and I appreciated it, and I look forward to seeing you soon again.
If I may add a flash reaction, Jim,
yeah, sure.
To what you said, when you say we're doing it so well. We're doing it awfully bad. In the last 2 years, we laid off 232 humans. How do you like that for doing it well? I will say, me or one of our three associates will tell you 2 weeks from now how what we're doing very, very special and revolutionary for laid off people. But I think that the key element in a rapport between an owner and a person working in the company, or between an executive, a CEO, and each person, is the handshake. It is the eye-to-eye, personal, intuitive relation between the two humans. And what is fascinating is that those that are starving for that and see the clearest in the fundamentals, values of the top management, it is the floor people in the plant or on the trucks or in the warehouse. And they classify us when we shake their hand, they classify us in one of three groups. That person is, and they talk together, that person is authentic. That guy, that woman, not sure. That person is, I'll be violent, but sometimes it's accurate, is hypocrite. The person salutes us just to have a good atmosphere and get more productivity. That's where it all starts, authenticity and humility between top management, shareholders, and what you talk about, what you might call stakeholders, the personnel in the company. They're so more fragile than many of us in their security and everything.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Does someone else have a question or comment?
Yeah, Judy?
Yes.
Yeah, Jan Freed. I wanted to ask Robert about if he could just talk a little more about his own personal practices. I mean, I know he mentioned that was a beautiful prayer. I just wondered if he's involved in, are you involved in meditation or what other kind of grounded, or is prayer your dominant practice?
Thank you for your question. I've learned from Mother Teresa something very simple, and every time I spoke to her, it was high risk because she was speaking so clearly that there's no bloody way I could not say to myself, well, that was confusing, I didn't understand. I understood all the time. And she often told me this, and she spoke publicly about that, and she wrote, and it's the answer to the question, and I'll give a few more details after if you want. Silence, everything starts with silence. Everything. For any human being of any tradition, atheist to strong believers of whatever. Silence leads to prayer and not the opposite. Silence leads to prayer. Prayer leads to faith. Faith leads to love. Love leads to compassion and service. Compassion and service leads to peace. And peace leads to silence. Since age of 16, I visited a weekend every 2 months of a Benedictine monastery. I've gone to many retreats, spiritual retreats, and very particularly at Thomas Keating in the American Rockies, where I've experienced on three occasions the top level or the advance, what they call the advance, total silence retreat of 10 days, which leads the participants to the discovery and, for some, the concrete living of contemplation. And I went three times. I was supposed to be there 2 weeks from now, but I won't be. I went three times, and I asked Father Thomas, how can we know, how can I know if I was within some distance, but not too far from contemplation? Oh, it's very simple. If you feel in your heart in the coming days more peace, stable joy, you were reached. And I couldn't believe it. I lived it, and I give the testimony about that. It works. Yes, but it all starts with silence and obviously some methods that are beautiful and simple on how to create, to stop the radio emitter of our brain and open the radio receptor of our hearts. Contemplation is, the fruit of contemplation is growing, stable and growing inner peace, inner joy. I have to say that today, I'm much older than all of you on the phone, or a bit older. This phone call I have the privilege of doing with you has been from the beginning to the end a prayer. Now, each moment of my life, I want it to be a prayer, including my mistakes. And prayer means an intimacy with Him during the bad moments and the good ones. And I have scientific evidence that He likes that. And the fruit is love. If there's no growth in love in my life, then I have to make changes in my course of living. In the last 5 years, I've asked Miriam, my precious, courageous wife, three times the following question at 2 years interval. And those of you that are married, you think about that. But it's a high-risk question. Miriam, I have a short question to ask you. Are you ready to answer just by yes or no? Yes or no? Do I love you today more than a year or two ago? Yes or no? On two occasions, on three, she said yes. And twice, the second occasion, she said yes, much more. I couldn't believe it because I didn't see any particular effort on my part in the 2 years before. Then I mechanically and emotionally turned to him and I said, boy, you're doing a bloody good job. Thank you. Am I answering a bit what your beautiful question?
That was a beautiful answer. I mean, honestly, and I will for sure go out and buy your book. Does your book talk about personal, is this kind of reflective of the tone of your book or not?
It's an authentic photocopy.
I think that's a wonderful note to close this call with. It has been a prayer, and Robert, I'm so very grateful to you and to God for connecting us and for God inspiring all of us in the work that we do and the community of connection that we have. And I'd like to ask you if you would close us with one more prayer. One possibility could be the prayer that you wrote for your company, but I would like to leave it for your choosing. If you could say a closing prayer for us, that would be a beautiful gift.
Let's start with 14 seconds of intimacy with him. Thank you so much, Lord Father, Lord Jesus, Lord of love, Spirit. Thank you that the three of you to love each one of us on the phone call right now so much. Thank you for continuing to love us so much. Thank you for inhabiting each one of us between now and eternity, so that each one of us with the three of you will be able slowly, a little bit more tomorrow than yesterday, to love each human being that will cross the path of our life. And a good way to embarrass them is to end by thank you to the three of you to have accepted.
Amen.
A prayer is a conversation with our best, most intimate, reliable, and always available friend. It's a conversation. Thank you. Shut up, Lena.
My experience with you is silence is also a conversation. Thank you very much. Thank you, everyone. And I look forward to seeing those of you who are going to be at the conference, and many, many blessings on those of you who can't be. I hope that our paths cross very soon. Take care, everybody.
Thank you.
God bless, Judy. Thank you very, very much.
God bless you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much, Jay Rivera.